Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It's time for Microbrew Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The Brewers are 2-1 to start the 2023 season. Monday afternoon, brings us the home opener at American Family Field. The New York Mets, the vaunted New York Mets, are in town, and we are here to talk about what we've just seen for the first three games of the year, what's to come. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Microbrew Podcast, and on the other line is my Milwaukee Journal Sentinel colleague, Kurt Hoag. He is a Brewers beat reporter who, as we record this on Sunday night, has not actually been yet to a regular season Brewers game. I have been to more Brewers regular season games at this point than you have, Kurt, so I'm winning 1-0. We will both be at the home opener on Monday, and I know you took some well-deserved vacay after spring training. I know you've been staying, you know, kind of keeping up with what's going on with the Milwaukee Brewers, but how are you, Kurt? How was the overall Arizona experience for you?
Well, I don't know what validity I like. Do I have any sort of grounds to talk anymore? I feel like I'm no longer an expert.
Watch them on TV and you have an analytical mind, and you know, you probably, there was a story of yours that ran on opening day that, so like you're still on our website and in our pages. So you have to count for something, Kurt.
That's right. I have covered 0% of games this year, though.
That is true. That is
no,
true.
That changes. That changes Monday.
That does change Monday.
It changes.
And I'll fill some gaps because I was there for the opener at Wrigley Field. It was actually not a game that we probably should spend much time talking
you
about.
Were there.
Certainly the
bad,
worst.
The bad day.
The worst of the three at Wrigley Field in Chicago this weekend. The Brewers do bounce back from kind of an ugly opening day, 4-0 loss to win 3-1 on Saturday in a game that I wouldn't necessarily classify as beautiful. But they got it done 3-1 and then busted out the bats. No homers, not a lot of extra base hits, but still scored 9 runs on Sunday and won 9-5 over Chicago. They head to New York with a winning record. Pretty cool. Pretty good start, I would say. And I think, certainly if we're talking about positive storylines to open the season, it's the youth movement. You know, since we last recorded, Bryce Terang became an immediate member of the 26-man roster. That was not something we necessarily saw coming. He has started a couple games already, has his first major league hit, his first major league stolen base, first RBI, extra base hit, all of it. Played great defense, was definitely one of the highlights, the talking points from this weekend. Joey Weimer did not make the roster on opening day, and yet it finds himself now on the roster as of day 2 of the season. He is recalled when Luis Urias strained a hamstring running to first base late in the opener against the Cubs, has to go on the injured list, will probably be out for 2 months, maybe as much as 2 months. And that opened a door for Joey Weimer, who's now out in the outfield. Brian Anderson moves from right field to third base. Already the injury bug showing itself. But those two, Garrett Mitchell, of course, kind of counts as a rookie. Gus Varland has had a couple encouraging performances already. He made his major league debut on opening day, so just a wild subset of newcomers who have made an impact right away. Give me your thoughts on them right now. I think in my mind, Terang is the most impressive, has really hit the ground running, but give me some thoughts on what you've seen from the rookies thus far and kind of how much this surprises you or not.
Yeah, my first thought coming out of this series goes back to, I guess, like thinking about what would have happened in this instance last year, where the Brewers, they had some depth. I mean, you know, Jace Peterson probably slots in as the everyday third baseman when Luis Urias goes down like this. The thing was, and we talked about this offseason too, is there was no, you know, high-end prospect. That AAA prospect depth just was not there. So, you know, throughout the entire season, the replacement guys were quite literally just replacement guys. And I think this looks a whole – the situation looks a whole lot different last year than this year, where it's like, oh yeah, Luis Urias is going to be out for, you know, you kind of get out of this series. You're like, oh yeah, they're not going to have Luis Urias for 6 to 8 weeks, but it doesn't feel quite like the end of the world. Maybe that's because the kids played really well, but the fact that they have those guys who are really good players, really good prospect pedigree to step up, that's pretty big. You're, you know, you there's some ceiling with those guys. We haven't seen what it is, but obviously Joey Weimer's got an immense ceiling. Bryce Terang, his more of a floor guy, but we've seen that he can swing it a little bit as well. Plays great defense. So it was all in all, I mean, it was encouraging from the kids.
Yeah, Terang's defense really stands out, and I admit I did not consider strongly consider, of course, Bryce Terang being a guy late in camp had a chance to make this team, but I did not consider the possibility that they would bring him up because I knew for them to do that they'd want him to play every day, and I felt like they just had a lot of different combinations of players that they would probably not want to rely on him as your everyday second baseman, and yet that's exactly what ended up happening, at least in the early part of the season here. And the defense really looks major league ready. I remember JJ Hardy in 2005 when he came up, made his major league debut on opening day. Actually, the last player before Bryce Durang to last Brewers player to make his major league debut on opening day, JJ Hardy back in 2005. Very much sold as the bat will take a while to get there, but the glove is major league ready. That was what got JJ Hardy on the opening day roster. He was okay defensively. I think, I think solid is a good way to think of JJ Hardy, but maybe not spectacular. I don't know if I feel that Bryce Terang is merely solid. It feels to me like he has the potential to be a very smooth, very slick second baseman. He's made some pretty solid plays thus far. Nothing that's going to make your jaw drop, but still some really good stuff. And yes, the bat came around. He had two hits and two walks on Sunday in the Brewers win. I mean, it's really encouraging what we've seen from him. And Weimer as well, like just, he gets that first double. Even though he isn't on the opening day roster, he has the first extra base hit of the year for the Milwaukee Brewers when he doubles a flare double on Saturday. I don't know if I really expect Joey Weimer to just go guns a blazing. And I also think that when Tyrone Taylor is healthy, that Joey Weimer is the obvious guy who goes back to AAA. But I think it's reasonable to expect Terang is just here, that he is your second baseman for the 2023 season. And obviously things can change, but is that your feeling as well? Like they are committing to him? Like he's not here on an experimental basis or until somebody's healthy. He is your second baseman for the Milwaukee Brewers in 2023. That's how I interpret it. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I agree. But first, JJ Hardy was really good defensively.
He was good.
I don't know if you mean like at first he was yeah. Okay at first, but then like, his career, his peak, he's very good.
I'm definitely talking about like the 2005 season. He wasn't.
Oh, yeah,
he just
yeah,
wasn't
he
as
up.
Flashy as I thought he was going to be. But that's anecdotal. I mean, I didn't have the defensive stats
he
at my.
He became better.
Yeah, and that could very well be.
At his peak, Fangraphs has him at worth 20 runs defensively in
Whoa.
2007. So pretty quickly, and then he was double digits every year until he was no longer a regular player. So, JJ Hardy, pretty good.
Yeah.
Defense
and
Bryce.
I stand corrected
well,
there.
Bryce, all right. JJ Hardy, respect given. Yeah, second base is Bryce Turing's job, especially with Luis Urias hurt. I thought if they were going to go with that second infielder, like another left-handed, not a second infielder, but like another utility infielder, they'd go and the one on the left bat would be Abraham Toro, just because of the big league experience there. But that was incorrect. I mean, we did not really talk much about Terang on the podcast last week, and it sure seems like, I mean, they gave him the opening day job. It seems like he's the second baseman. It's not been Owen Miller. Even when Luis Urias went down, Miller got the start against the lefty, but Terang's back in there again Sunday against the righty Tyone. So, yeah, I mean, and obviously it's going to be performance based too. You got to produce. You got to hit. The defense is going to be there, and I do feel like it's going to be a little different with Weimer when Taylor comes back. Performance certainly is going to matter, but they're comparable profiles in terms of right-handed hitting outfielder who can play center and right, and there's just they could send down Miller when the time comes if Weimer is just destroying the ball and they can't send him down. But if he's, probably more around the league average, which is still good for a rookie, like the Brewers would definitely take that, but it might not be enough to keep him up whenever Tyrone Taylor comes back. But that's a ways from now, and a lot can happen between now and then.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely true. We should talk more about the Luis Urias injury, because that actually ties into this, giving Joey Weimer his roster spot at this point and moving some things around. Urias is, he's not a guy that you think, oh, the season's sunk because he's not available. But I think after last year was a little bit of a step backward for him, I thought maybe there'd be a pretty good opportunity for him to really, you know, seize the opportunity to again, still be a starting third baseman and have another pretty productive year like he did a couple seasons ago. He, of course, had a big home run in the World Baseball Classic. There was a lot to like about Urias's profile, and I still feel like he can contribute. I personally think he probably is a little bit better if he's able to be a second baseman, like a middle infielder more than a corner infielder in terms of, you know, what you get offensively production wise. But I know the Brewers really believe in that bat, and I think that this is a loss. The Brewers are built in a way where I don't know if it's a catastrophic loss, but it's definitely something that I think they're going to feel at some point. What hit you when you saw, you know, of course, this worst case scenario in the cold of Wrigley, a guy, of course, ends up with a hamstring injury in the ninth inning of a game that was pretty well in hand. Cubs won that game 4-0. So it feels even, you know, kind of even a little worse. But the idea that he might miss 2 months is pretty dramatic. So what were your thoughts when you saw Urias go down?
Yeah, it just feels like that's a guy who the Brewers just need to see him healthy for an entire season. We haven't seen him be able to unlock what the Brewers think he can unlock. And that's the main thing that came to my mind is, you know, they do have some depth. They do have some depth to replace him. At least hope, you know, they hope will fill in nicely there. But if you know, you're one injury not away now from not really having that so much. So yeah, between just the guy hasn't been able to put together a full season yet. And this is another instance of that. And then we'll see how well that this depth can hold up. Those are things that came to my mind. In addition to, that's some pretty crappy luck on a crappy day.
Yeah, that's really tough. I mean, that first game was so bad, Kurt. The opener was so bad. The bats did not come to life at all. The new guys, William Contreras and Jesse Winker, both of whom have had really good moments elsewhere in the series, but on that day they were both, I think they combined for 6 strikeouts, maybe, and Brian Anderson had one too. So I think between the 3 newcomers, there were 7 strikeouts. There was just only singles, 4 singles. Corbin Burns was fine, but not spectacular. It wouldn't have mattered when the offense got him no runs. And then you lose one of your starting infielders on a play, kind of a fluky play at the end of the game. Truly bad. The defense was not good. It was a mess. Obviously things took a turn in the other direction. So that's good. You know, I want to go back to the kids real quick before I move on. The speed factor is something that I didn't fully appreciate. We knew Garrett Mitchell could move, could run. He had a triple on Sunday. That was pretty great. He again flashed his speed, although he got thrown out at home on the contact play. So negated that a little bit, but Bryce Tarang's speed is considerable. He had a really smart stolen base on Sunday. He's shown that he is very, very fast. Joey Weimer, who is a big boy, by the way, might be even faster than Tarang. I mean, the guy has major, major wheels. That flare double could have been a single for the vast majority of human beings. And he was into second base pretty easily on Saturday. The guy can really, really run. This is not something that I had anticipated. I know he can play center field, so I know he can run. But I didn't know he could just fly. I mean, suddenly the Brewers have that asset kind of in droves. You know, you throw in Christian Yelich, who obviously can move a little bit. I mean, not everybody on this team can fly, but suddenly, like, this is a really fast team. I'm wondering if we're going to see the, you know, training wheels come off and guys start stealing bases left and right. Maybe we get to that point as well. But that this is something that the Brewers have not had in quite some time, Kurt.
It's remarkable. And think about it. Bryce Tarang, if you include Sal Frelick in this group too, Bryce Tarang might have the lowest, like, running grade on the scouting scale. But I don't know how to, like, I don't know how to describe it. Maybe it's like game speed. He can fly. The way with which he gets up to speed and does so quickly, like that single that he beat out for his first big league hit, he was booking it. I don't know what his home to first time was, but it was fast. And then we obviously know what Garrett Mitchell can do, and Joey Weimer showing some flashes as well. Like that's 3 guys who are plus. Yeah, they're plus. They're all plus runners. Maybe even plus runners. Mitchell for sure is. And then Sal Frelick, like I said, is another one in that category on the way up. We'll see what the Brewers choose to do with stolen bases. We've obviously seen a little bit in the first weekend of the season that the success rate for stolen bases has incredibly high. It's everything Rob Manfred wanted and then some. I saw it was like 90% or something going into today, which is insane. That's an insanely high stolen base percentage. The Brewers, if they see that, I would venture to guess they're going to go, they're going to have no reserves about letting these guys cook on the base paths. There is the question of, like, I don't know, there's a light injury risk with running, and there's also that, you know, that small chance that you run into an out. And the Brewers are generally pretty home run driven, not this weekend, but they're generally pretty home run driven. And I don't know if you know this, but you can score on a home run from first or second or third. So it doesn't matter what base you're on when Rowdy Tellez bops one 450 feet. So we'll see if that still remains some of the generalized strategy. But for sure, I think we'll see, especially if the success rate around the league, you know, remains above 80%, and these guys are faster than league average, they'll let him run.
Yeah, they do have a little bit of that power, that Rowdy Tellez power. he struggled a little bit in Chicago, but he did get off the schneid a little bit on Sunday, and there was even a hit and run with Rowdy Tellez, I'm pretty sure that was. So that was fascinating and awesome. Luke Voit, we saw a couple of bats from him. They do end up keeping Luke Voit. That was a question mark the last time we podcast. They do sign him. He is now the backup first baseman on this team. Right-handed hitting power, which is something that they needed, and so that's... That's kind of cool. That's interesting. Just to put a bow on the Luke Voit situation, it does, of course, end with the Brewers keeping him. I kind of think where you and everyone thought it was going. That was sort of a weird series of circumstances. But any last thoughts to that? Was it a surprise that he did still land in Milwaukee?
I don't know if it was a surprise so much, considering that he pushed back that first deadline because he wanted to be in Milwaukee. And the two sides just needed to work through some things. Minor league deals are so complicated in these instances when it comes to opt-outs. I mean, minor league deals are more complicated than big league deals. There's just, especially when there's like a, you know, the invite to big league spring training and it's an established guy like Voit. There was always things to work through, and the Brewers are, you know, they value that flexibility and that roster spot. So, when he opted out that second time, there was some questions about, you know, are they gonna get this thing done? Is Philly or someone gonna, you know, pop in with $5-6 million? That would be a good spot for him as well. He wants to win. He's not just gonna go to Detroit or somewhere when he could go to Milwaukee. But in the end, it all worked out. He wanted to be in Milwaukee from the get go. Made that clear. I don't know if that hurt him in leverage at all, but everyone ended up in the spot they wanted to be. He's got a club option for next year, so if he hits this year, the Brewers can get him back for cheap next year. Here we are again. The Brewers are again with two first basemen, one left-handed, one right-handed, just like last year. It's just funny how their roster construction seems to, I mean, they, not just last year too, their roster construction seems to generally follow this sort of path, whether it was Jesus Aguilar and Eric Thames were kind of just like that. So it's the way.
Yeah, it's the way. And last year's right-handed first baseman is back in the organization. He's in the minors, Keston Hira. No team claimed him. No team claimed him on waivers. And he winds up back with the Brewers. Doesn't even have the leverage to sort of opt out of that deal and sign with someone else, presumably on a minor league deal or whatever. Granted, the options for him in Milwaukee are probably just as good as anywhere else, but I can't believe he's still here. Craig Counsell, on the day before opening day, there was some media availability, and he expressed that, you know, he's bummed out that Keston Hira wasn't able to get a major league deal. Like, he feels like he should have an opportunity. So that blew me away, and we don't have to spend much time on that. Keston Hira is now off the 40-man roster. I don't know what his future is in Milwaukee, but man, I don't know why no one took a chance on him. That really, really surprises me. Feels like a guy that some, you know, Baltimore or somebody would have taken a flyer on. But here he is. He's still here, Kurt. He could still be I still think if we did a podcast on, like, predictions, you know, like crazy predictions, over-unders or whatever, Keston Hira having a big hit for the Milwaukee Brewers this year still feels like something that's definitely going to happen.
Yeah, I'll put it at, like, plus... Well, define, I don't know how you define big hit. But
yeah, that's true. That's true. We'd have to be more specific.
But Keston Hira with like a game-winning hit in September or October. I'll put it at like plus I'd give it like plus 200.
Yeah, I don't know if we could take that to the futures market. That's a little awkward. We'll figure something out. I regret that we didn't do like a here's like 10 crazy things that we think are going to happen, or which guy is going to lead the team in RBIs. Thing, you know, random things. We should.
We've played three games. We can still do that. Bryce Turang hits the most homers on his team.
Oh no, Kurt. Well, I tell you what, there was no power in Chicago, so suddenly that's on the table. Nobody homered. There were no home runs in Chicago, but a number of singles.
It's too bad. I said Joey Beamer hits the most homers on this team last week this time. Actually last week he sent down. That might have been my stupidly insane bold take, considering how he was starting the year in AAA, and then he got called up on day two, so it's no longer stupidly insane and bold, but count that one for me.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't think that's gonna happen. But it's still pretty stupidly bold, is what I'm trying to tell you. So that's
the point here.
It might work. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So yes, this team has a lot of power hitters. They did not have power in Chicago. Obviously, it's very cold. It's difficult to, you know, the wind was blowing in. So that obviously played a factor there. Hopefully, the Brewers will get those bats going with the long ball here as they return to American Family Field. They've got six games coming up against the Mets and the Cardinals. A couple more thoughts, though, before we get to three up, three down and some of the features that we're bringing back here this year. The bullpen. Hey, the bullpen looked great. Now they're playing the Chicago Cubs. Consider that. But the early data points pretty nice for the bullpen. Devin Williams picked up a save on Saturday, got drilled with a comebacker, but seems no worse for wear. So he gets his first save, a little adventurous, but still locked that down. We saw some pretty good innings. Gus Varland got, you know, a three-pitch strikeout in his major league debut, and then after getting the second out, loaded the bases before getting out of that jam. He was able to finish the game on Sunday. Javi Guerra had one really good outing and one, you know, not great outing, but still, you know, still shows some of that promise. Peter Strzelecki had two very good outings in that series, so the bullpen looks good. The bullpen is still a massive question mark, Kurt, and like, it's going to require great performances from guys that, to be quite frank, no one around the league has heard of. You know, no one around the league knows that Javi Guerra pitches for the Milwaukee Brewers. No one has heard of Gus Varland. No one has heard. Maybe even Matt Bush, I think, is a little bit under the radar, possibly. Peter Strzelecki certainly is a guy.
Everyone's heard of Hobie Milner, though.
Everyone knows Hobie Milner. He is a household name. He is a staple. We did see him on Sunday as well. I don't know if I could say that like there's enough there to really boost my expectations for the bullpen per se, but they delivered. You know, you got to admit they showed up in Chicago, and I don't know, maybe there's a little bit of optimism there. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's, I don't perception has changed. Like, it's still the biggest question mark for me about this team.
Yeah,
let's wait and see until, you know, they're holding some 3-2 leads, and it's not just Bush and Williams that have to do that. So we'll see on that. But on an individual level, for sure, like Gus Varland, poor Miles Mastroboni. I don't know how to say his last name, but the Cubs outfielder, that poor guy's probably done. That's with Gus Varland.
He hates
Gus Varland after this weekend. It's like this Rule 5 kid is out here throwing this. But Gus Varland on an individual level showed what he showed in spring, that he can miss bats at the big league level. That's big. Peter Strzelecki looked really good. Javi Guerra sort of was what we saw in spring. It's either really, really good or not really, really good. So it's that's kind of the question mark. But yeah, I think especially Strzelecki and Varland, like the arrows pointing up there, they're going to need big outs from Peter Strzelecki this year. I don't know in what role that's going to come. I do think they're like right now, they sneaky might miss Adrian Hauser. Like his bullpen, the way he's pitched out of the bullpen in his career has been amazing. Like a sub-2 ERA in what, 50, 60 innings or something like that. And they just, you know, they could use him for some big innings early in the year. And he's out with the groin strain. So they'll need guys to step up. And we don't know exactly who it's going to be still. It's only been three games. Bears was lucky. He was good.
Yeah, for sure. Christian Yelich, he looks pretty good. He had a couple strikeouts, but driving the ball the opposite way. We still haven't necessarily seen the pull power, but hitting some ropes when they're not falling in. The Christian Yelich watch, I think, will be will be continuing throughout the course of 2023, even though I think everybody understands that the expectations have lowered a little bit. Any thoughts, any early thoughts on Christian watch?
I think 5 strikeouts and 15 plate appearances, not what you want to see.
No.
A guy like Yelich, with especially without the elite power right now, you want to see that around like 20, 22% or so. Again, it's been 3 games, though. So, yeah, the opposite field power is certainly there. He'll be able to get some extra hits, bop some homers that way. But the way you're going to unlock his really good offensive profile, as we've talked about a lot, is pulling the ball, pulling it in the air. He does pull the ball, but it's just so often that when he pulls it, it's on the ground. And then when he goes the opposite field, it's in the air. It's a very confusing conundrum. And I am no swing coach, so I cannot completely break it down. But the batted ball profile, like when he hits the ball, he's been hitting it hard still. So it's, you know, it's the same thing we saw in spring training, basically. So is Christian Yelich back? No, not yet. That's the answer to the is Christian Yelich back watch.
If we were to build a Christian watch, is he back o-meter, we would probably we would definitely not have it above the mid-level point at this point. But you never know.
Yeah, it start at a 5? Is that where we start? The meter starts to begin the year.
Yeah. Well, yes, I suppose.
I think it's wherever it started. Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
We didn't really see anything groundbreaking or anything like overly. Oh no, this is bad. This series.
A lot of people will be watching Corbin Burnes as well. His comments in the offseason certainly illustrate that the relationship with the organization is not necessarily all hunky dory. Like, it might be fine, but he goes out opening day and does exactly kind of what he did at last opening day. Very, very similar numbers, which is to say, it wasn't terrible. It was really one pretty bad inning, and his defense betrayed him quite a bit. But you know, he wasn't dominant. He wasn't striking out the ballpark. He only had 3 punchouts in 5 innings. But as Craig Counsell and everyone said afterwards, the Cubs are a team that attacks, that looks to put the ball in play, and not necessarily a team that's going to rack up strikeouts, even against someone elite like Corbin Burnes. So so outing. He takes the loss. It's not entirely his fault. No offense behind him, and the defense wasn't great either. So any thoughts on the Corbin Burnes outing?
The Cubs are kind of like the Pirates in that regard, where they go into these outings and they're just trying to dink and dunk him, basically. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And the Cubs, even, it's a bit of a new look Cubs, but you look at the guys up and down their lineup, and that's, you know, Hosmer and I think Bellinger aside, Dansby Swanson, that's sort of what their approach was against him. So I don't read anything into individual starts, especially on opening day at Wrigley, where I can't decide if it's worse to be a pitcher or a hitter. Yeah. I just think it's a bad time to be a baseball player. And Rob Manfred, if you are listening to this, why don't we just take opening day and move it to a domed stadium or a warm climate? And then the Cubs can have their home opener after, like, I guess we don't need to give them a 10-day road trip, but just like next weekend. I know it might still be really bad weather and you can't predict it, but like, let's just play the odds a little. I don't know. It's just not good baseball weather. You know, just play that game in Milwaukee, and then we can all go to Wrigley Field later on in the year when it's not wind blowing in at 20 miles an hour and everybody that's playing wishes they were, you know, why couldn't we just play this game in American Family Field of Phoenix, huh? Why couldn't we do that?
It does feel silly that when the two teams are 90 miles apart, now for the second year in a row, they've chosen the lesser of two climate, you know, favorable climates to open up the year. I think that's probably, if I had to guess, just simply spreading the wealth in terms of the true opening day and making sure that every team gets a crack at that, a couple cracks, you know, regular cracks at that every, you know, basically every other year in concept, even though this is now 2 years in a row. It does seem silly because the Brewers have a perfectly fine venue. Even if you push the Cubs back a week, you're bound to get slightly better weather. I think no matter what, you're going to get some bad weather in April. It's completely unavoidable. So I don't know. I did hear that and understand that, but also I just wasn't that bothered by it. All right, let's move on.
One more thing on this. I'm not done with you, Chicago weather. Like, the Cubs are going to have to live with this weather, you know, whether they're playing at home on opening on March 30th or whether they're opening at home on like April 7th. But it's just that the Brewers were subjected to it 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
And I just like, let them go to, if you're going to put them on the road, just put them in, I don't know, Miami. Now that's a place.
Yeah.
That is a place to open the season. Aren't the Bears building a new stadium? Isn't that a thing?
Yeah, they're working toward it. It wouldn't be downtown.
And aren't they putting a roof on it?
You know what? I haven't paid close enough attention, but that
I
was.
I thought I saw that.
Yeah, that was the initial plan. I don't know if we're still there financially, but yeah, that was the initial works. Even in
football, you know, the outdoor element sport, the Chicago team's like, yeah, you know, it's the weather here's not great. Let's go indoors. So, yeah, I just don't enjoy like nasty. I wasn't even there this weekend, and I'm like, I spent enough time in nasty Wrigley days last year to not miss it.
Yeah, at this point, it's a feature, not a bug. The Wrigley experience is the wind, is the bad weather in April, is the long sleeves, ridiculous outfield issues. It's all part of it. So that's what baseball wants. Baseball wants to embrace the Wrigley of it all, and that is certainly part of the Wrigley of it all. All right, we're going to move now to three up, three down. We did this last year, where rather than speaking to the big picture issues, we talk about the little things, the plays that jumped out at us, the moments, the maybe a quote, just little things, and go through the minutia. We'll have a couple more things after that, but here is three up, three down. Kurt, I'm going to start with a play on Sunday. Honestly, you know, it could have, if the wind had been blowing really any other direction other than straight in, I think it probably changes the course of the game. Yan Gomes, Cubs catcher, hit a ball that probably could have been a grand slam and made it 9-7. Instead, it landed safely in Joey Weimer's glove right at the warning track, made it 9-4. Cubs would score again in that inning, but that would be it, 9-5. And it could have obviously gone very south, and the Brewers would have seen a 6-run lead very much in jeopardy. Joey Weimer, I loved it, you know, in the minor leagues, you don't get ivy outfield walls anywhere. So unusual circumstances, wind that you probably don't get anywhere in the minor leagues. And he just casually camps under it, right field, no problem, no sweat, catches that ball right up against the wall. And that ends up being a big sigh of relief for Brewers fans. So just a couple things like thank you, wind, for blowing where the direction you were blowing at that moment. And Joey Weimer showing some veteran calm out there in right field on what could have been a game-changing play. Very fun.
Yeah, I would have lost my lunch. If I would lose my lunch regularly if I was a big league player, but especially if I was playing right field at Wrigley in early April. Oh, here I go again. I can't not rag on it. But there was a play in the ninth inning where Gus Varland gave, I think it was a double to Horner maybe, and Weimer, you could tell he got a little bit by playing right field at Wrigley on that one. So it's a challenge. It is like the walls, the dimensions are funky. It kind of is, it's like, it's not a nice cookie cutter shape. And then you got, oh yeah, the basket and, you know, the ivy and, oh yeah, the fans are literally right there. It's not a good time to be a right fielder.
No, it's not. What do you got for three up, three down?
What do I got? Brandon Woodruff. I don't know if you had heard this, but he's pretty good.
He's outstanding.
He's pretty good. He the changeup especially. He threw 11 of, or got swings on 11 of them in Saturday's outing. He went six innings, gave up one run, just a solo homer to Ian Happ. That one I don't want to call it a Wrigley homer because it had to get through the wind, but it was a Wrigley homer because it caught the basket. That was one where Weimer looked like he was under it, but it was apparently not. But anyway, aside from that, he got swings on 11 changeups, eight of them, JR, eight of them. Yeah. Resulted in nothing but air. Eight whiffs on 11 changeup swings.
Corbin Burns got like nine whiffs total. Corbin Burns only got nine whiffs total on Thursday. So that's impressive.
Insane. Yeah, I mean, it's not hard to understand why his changeup's really good. I mean, you can see the movement on it. But also, you can see that this guy has not one, but two really hard fastballs that you have to gear up for. And his demeanor and on the mound kind of says, yeah, I'm about to throw 97 sinking in on your hands and you better get ready for it. And then all of a sudden the arm action's the same. And then, oh, here's 87 and it's tailing. So it's a really good pitch. And the thing that he's doing right now is he's locating it really well. Going back to last year, it's somehow maybe now his best pitch. I mean, that four seam is still overpowering, and he blew that by the Cubs a bunch of times as well. But adding the way he's added the changeup just takes him to a whole nother level. Like, that's when he's unhittable.
Truly special stuff from Brandon Woodruff, and easy to dream big still on what Burns and Woodruff, and for that matter, you know, Lauer, who skirted around some initial, what looked like some just initial danger stuff, to have a pretty productive outing on Sunday, and Freddy Peralta, who will start the home opener. It's very promising stuff. Okay, my number two thing from three up, three down. This is a thing that everybody's talking about. The pace of play seems to have really dramatically improved. We saw that in spring training. At this point, it's no secret. You know, the time of game is way, way down. The opener was 2 hours and 21 minutes, and that was crisp. The game Sunday was under 3 hours and featured a ton of walks, a ton of hits, a ton of runs, and it was still under 3 hours. If you can keep this game under 3 hours, that is going to be a huge, huge hit. I think bigger than anyone even realizes. We did see the very first pitch clock violation in MLB history in that first game on Thursday when Marcus Stroman of the Cubs was called for taking too long. Christian Yelich got a ball. I believe he worked a walk in that at bat, so it paid some dividends. And you know, that isn't truly that remarkable of a you know, milestone, but it was still kind of notable that it happened in the Brewers Cubs game. This pace of play stuff, the pitch clock, it's looking really, really good. I am much more excited about it and intrigued by it than I guess I thought I would be, and I'm loving it. I'm loving the pace of play, Kurt.
Yeah, anything. I mean, like, my rule of thumb last year was anything under 3 hours was great by my, you know, my gauge of, all right, you know, like, let's have a crisp game. So this is fantastic. Every game pretty much now is under 3 hours. And it, honestly, sometimes where you appreciate it the most is the games that even go over 3 hours, because those are like the 12 to 10 big offense, a lot of pitching change games. And that would have taken you 4+ hours before. I know some people, not many people, but some people are not a fan. I am not one of those people. I am a fan. And I think the, like, I don't know if there's someone officially keeping track of this summer, but I feel like the Brewers benefited more often than not this weekend from the automatic ball or automatic strike calls. Like, I don't know. I don't remember if they had one called on them.
Yeah, I don't think so. All right. What's your number two?
My number two is we kind of referenced this already, but Devin Williams, it's good news. We could have been talking about Devin Williams in bad news on this podcast as well, after he got hit in on the elbow on a line comebacker, first batter he faces of the season, hits him right on his throwing arm. That's not good. But not only does he somehow manage to stay in the game, get the save, not give up a run, but today on Sunday he was warming up again in the ninth inning with when the tying run was, I think, in the hole with two outs.
Yeah.
So if Varland had walked a guy or something, it becomes a save situation. Maybe they go to him there. That's a really good sign. That's a big deal. And the fact that he didn't have to pitch is also kind of, you know, you kind of get to save your Devin Williams outings for when you really need them. That's when you want them. You don't want to be having to use your closer in a game that was 9-3 in the bottom of the eighth. It's just not optimal. You want to throw this guy as healthy and as, you know, as fresh for every outing you can get. And so a couple of minor wins there for the Brewers that might be big in the long run.
Yeah. My number three, Dansby Swanson. Annoying. Eight hits over the three games. They finally kind of contained him on Sunday, but the Cubs' big time offseason acquisition, the shortstop, made some flashy plays. That is his calling card, the defense, and he showed it, especially in the first couple games. But the offense was very frustrating. He was definitely the hardest guy to get out. So the Cubs might, you know, there's a chance they have something there that they made some good move, at least one very good move this offseason. This is a very different Cubs team. I still don't think the Brewers are going to have to worry about them in the long run. But Dansby Swanson is definitely a thorn in their side this weekend and has had his moments against them in the past. So that's enough, Dansby Swanson. That's enough.
A thought on the Cubs, though, is like it is a peculiar roster. Like last year, you know, they had some young guys like Christopher Morel, Pat Wisdom, who I guess the Brewers saw plenty of this weekend as well. But guys sort of along that line, you know, in that vein, they got some guys in AAA too, like Matt Mervis, their first baseman, who hits lots of dingers. They got some young guys, yet you kind of look up and down the roster and it's, or their lineup at least, and it's fairly different than it was last year. I mean, they signed Cody Bellinger to a pretty big deal. Like, they got Trey Mancini to fill in. Yan Gomes is still the catcher. So it's Edwin Rios is there. So it's, it's kind of just a strange roster, honestly. Like it might work. To close it up, let's go with Jesse Winker. We talked a little about him not having it first game of the year, but he came through. Did he come through in tying the game as a pinch hitter on Saturday, and then had a couple big hits again on Sunday. The Brewers are gonna need a lot from him. Their depth is slightly thinned out, so he's gonna play anyway before the Reyes injury. But the depth is slightly thinned out, and so that just means you're gonna need more from the guys that you're counting on a lot from. And he's a guy that they're counting on for a lot. I don't think there's any big takeaway really from his at bats this weekend. It's not like he socked three homers through the wind. Maybe a little bit strikeout heavy at times, but again, three games. So yeah, Jesse Winker just he had a good series, and we'll see if he can keep it up. If he can hit at American Family Field like he has throughout his career, that will begin on Monday.
Yeah, for sure. Brewers again, New York Mets. That's the home opener, 1 o'clock on Monday. We've got then two more games. The first night game of the year is Tuesday, Wednesday, another day game against the Mets, and then starting on Friday, a three-game series with the St. Louis Cardinals. Not as many opportunities to see the NL Central foes this year, for better or worse, and Brewers will nonetheless have seen two of their regular foes here in the first three series of the year. Okay, moving on to Remember When. Every week, we look back in time at some timely little nugget from Brewers history and have a little fun with it. So here we go, Remember When. All right, I was looking at debuts. Actually wrote up at jsonline.com a list of players who made their debut on opening day in the Brewers organization. That was before Gus Varlin and Bryce Terang added their names to the list. If you want to go back to a year when two players made their debut like they did in 2023 here, you got to go to 1982, a good year for Brewers fans going to the World Series at the end of that particular season. The two names that I would mention, though, who made their debut in 1982, not necessarily memorable as Milwaukee Brewers. It's Kevin Bass and Doug Jones. Kevin Bass was later traded late in the season for the deal that brought Don Sutton from Houston to Milwaukee. That, of course, did pay big-time dividends. Don Sutton with some really important, especially last day of the regular season performance, pitched for them in the postseason. So that was important in one way. Kevin Bass not leaving much of an additional mark in the organization. Doug Jones is an interesting one. Doug Jones, many people will remember him, my age and a little bit older, will remember him. He had the giant mustache, pitched with Cleveland, had a lot of success with Cleveland, ended up making five All-Star teams, change-up specialist. The old line on him, when he came back to the Brewers in the late 90s, 96, 97, the joke was, he's got three pitches, slow, slower, and slowest, and that's exactly what he threw. This is a very different changeup than the one that Devin Williams throws. This is a very different type of pitch. But Doug Jones made his debut in 1982 on opening day with the Milwaukee Brewers. He pitched a 1-2-3 ninth on opening day. It was a 15-4 win. It was a blowout against the Blue Jays. He had been told, though, that he wasn't going to pitch. He wasn't going to make the big league roster. He'd been sent to AAA to start the year. He checked out of his hotel and then got a call. This is similar to the Joey Weimer situation. He gets a call from Harry Dalton, the general manager, saying, Jim Slayton got back spasms. We need you on the big league roster. So Doug Jones gets to the big league team, appears on opening day, makes his big league debut. He ends up appearing in four games. By 10 days later, he's already back in AAA. He does not come back to the majors that year. He does not come back to the majors for three additional years. He's released by the Brewers. He pays his way to spring training so that Cleveland can get a look at him. He is literally paying his own way to go to spring training to just get any shot at all. He's already 25 when he makes his debut, so he's 29 years old by the time he gets back to the big leagues. Cleveland takes the flyer on him. He spends a year at AAA again. He develops this changeup, which did not exist when he was with the Brewers in 82. And Cleveland ends up having use for him. He returns to the big leagues in 1986. Well, he winds up spending 14 additional years in Major League Baseball thanks to this changeup. Makes those five All-Star teams. He's back with the Brewers in 1996. He's their closer. He has like 49 saves over kind of two-plus years with the Brewers. He sets Cleveland's single-season save record with 43. It's been broken since then, but at the time it was pretty cool. just a wild beginning. Like, I didn't even realize until recently that Doug Jones, the guy who'd been an all-star with Cleveland all those years, actually started his career with the Brewers. The Brewers actually ended up trading him in the 90s as a veteran for Eric Plunk back to Cleveland, which I find kind of funny. So two different ways to get from Milwaukee to Cleveland, I guess, in his career. He's up there. He's not a Hall of Famer, Doug Jones, but he's up there with some of the best, I would say, non-Hall of Fame relievers. Bruce Sutter is actually, who is a Hall of Famer, is actually one of the comparables on Baseball Reference. Mostly guys that, you know, Jeff Reardon, Steve Bedrosian, Rick Aguilera, Roberto Hernandez, guys who were very, very good and played for a long time. Crazy that his career got started with 4 games in 1982 and then 3 years of not playing in the major leagues. But there's an interesting story, an opening day performance kind of lost to history, but fairly interesting. All right, that is Remember When. We'll go back in time each week, have a little fun with it, and we'll close down every episode the same way each week. It is, with as long as Kurt's here, we'll call it Kurt Blanche. It is Kurt's Take of the Week.
Ryan Braun sends it for a center and deep. Get up! Get out of here! Gone for Ryan Braun. He just hit a walk-off homer.
Well, I had a take all prepared. I had this take all prepared. And then you started talking about Doug Jones, so I looked him up. And I want to change. I'm like, should I change this thing?
Wow.
Even though I'm not going to. But okay. That is one way to just bring up. His nickname was Mild Thing. Oh my god! That's the best baseball nickname of all time.
I did not realize that. And
that's,
I mean,
so good.
And as somebody who has history with both Cleveland and Milwaukee, of course, the movie Major League starring Rick Wild Thing Vaughn involves the Cleveland team playing in Milwaukee, you know, where it's filmed. I feel like the serendipity is all over this thing.
So good.
Yeah.
That's so good. Just like it totally goes against what you expect from a closer too.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got to get this take off, JR. I got to do it. Now, I could be proven totally wrong tomorrow when we show up at the press box at American Family Field. However, if the internet is not lying to me, and the internet has never lied to me.
Never.
I add.
Nope.
Never
it's
once.
Perfect.
But if the internet is to be believed, the press box, which featured dents in the drywall from foul balls that have been hit over the last 10, 12, 15 years, at American Family Field / Miller Park, those dents have been covered up. They've been plastered over and painted over. No more holes, no more dents, and no more markings of the player and the pitcher and the date who made them happen, or what writer almost got their head knocked off. I mean, this is just an abomination. That was. I don't care if you think it's an, I don't know if anyone thought it was an eyesore, but if you did think it was an eyesore, I don't care. You're just, it's part of the character of the press box. I've been to many other in the league, not all of, not the majority, but nothing else like that anywhere else. I mean, it's kind of fun to look back and see the names, you know, see, oh, on this date, Orlando Arcia tagged one back here off Ross Stripling or something like that. And also a reminder to watch your head, because there are foul balls screaming in here. So I lament the loss of our beautiful wall. I am outraged that it was taken from us, and that no one was informed of this. Like it kind of made its rounds on what? It was on opening day, I think. Some tweeted it at some writers or something.
And, yeah, a fan on a tour at the ballpark took the picture and put it up. Like, I thought there were all these markings. Like, where'd all the markings go?
Yeah.
Now, this is the type of thing that only affects writers, so I get, or people who are in the press box at any event, so I get why people don't, like, care about this. I guess people who are on a tour will see it. It's kind of a cool little aspect of the tour, but...
Yeah, if you take a tour, it's one of the cooler parts of the tour. Absolutely. I don't know. I think it's cool to, like, look up in the press box and see that, too. You can see it on TV or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously, when we talk about reporters getting their heads taken off, our colleague Todd Rosiak has been in the crosshairs many times, has nearly died from these foul balls
many
that wind up in the press box. And, you know, so again, I realize people probably don't care, but... Guys, it really sucks that this got taken away. It really was this cool character element. It, you know, like maybe it is just for the media, and maybe people really just don't care. But like, You know, think about Fenway Park, where they have the names on the other side of the Green Monster, where players have signed their names, people who've been there all through history. This is nowhere near that valuable, but it is still cool. It's cool. It's character. And to just paint over it, like, sort of unceremoniously feels really crazy to me. You know, at some point you get to a point where the wall is so dinged up that it loses probably some structural integrity, or it's just so dinged up that it's like, you know, it's just a bunch of permanent marker and damaged drywall. Like, I get that at some point it's probably something you just have to repair. Maybe it's cheaper to do it on the front end than it is like later on when you have to replace walls and stuff. Like, I don't know. Maybe that was all part of the calculus. I don't know what the calculus was, but it sucks. Like, that really is a big, bad bummer. And I don't know who made that decision. Maybe there was a really good reason for it. I don't know the context. It does not affect the common fan, so it's not that big a deal. But it's a big deal. There are people who are very, very upset. I'm really bummed out. It really, really bums me out. That is a stadium that I think this year the Brewers have done a lot of really cool things, actually, to try to win back some fans, some of the lost interest level. I like some of the packages that they have. The Sunday Funday package, I think, is really smart. I do think they're making strides. They're doing some things that I think make a lot of sense to me. That does not make sense to me. You guys gotta think that through a little bit more. At least I don't know who they would talk to necessarily get a better feel on whether they should do that. But man, that breaks my heart. It really breaks my heart a little bit.
Me, JR.
Talk, they should talk to us.
Talk to Todd. Talk to you. Talk to Ad. Like,
sad. It's sad.
It's sad. I've never had to find out that someone was cheating on me, but I feel like
that's kind of what it's like.
That's kind of how it is. That's it's not even that. It's like, I feel like that's what it's like when you find out via
social media.
You go shopping at the mall and you're like, you're doing what?
We should write a country song about the lost dents in the wall.
This is how we find out.
Yeah, simultaneously understanding that it is not a big deal, not important, and also really, really bummed out. Really bummed out about it. So we will be there. We will be there on Monday, up against a wall that is no longer the wall that we know and love. For opening day, you can find live blog. I'll be doing a live blog during the game. Some of the sights and sounds, as well as some of the action on the field, that you can check out. That'll be updating on a regular basis. You can obviously follow Kurt, Todd Rosiak. We're gonna have a lot of people out there from the Journal Sentinel. Hannah Kirby will be doing some social media, so check out Journal Sentinel on Instagram, on TikTok. We've got a lot of stuff. All of that is available to you, and we are happy to get things going here, get things going on the home front, as the Brewers at 2-1 welcome in the New York Mets. Any last thoughts, Kurt, before I let you go?
Baseball.
Baseball.
Yeah. No, I got nothing else.
Baseball, baseball, baseball. Thanks for tuning into the Microbrew Podcast, everybody. We will chat with you again very soon. Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. We got the Bucks Podcast as well. As we record this, we're in the process of, I think, beating the Philadelphia 76ers. It was a touch and go there for a minute, but I think they're in a good place. We'll be chatting about that. That'll be coming out on Tuesday morning with Ben Steele, Jim Ozarski, myself, Lori Nickel. Should be good. So find that podcast as well, and we will chat with you again very soon. Bye-bye, everybody.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.